Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And Sean Moniger, Reverend Sean of the Unity Church, is back with us to talk about something else. And I'm going to go right to you. Would you just please talk about the church and give a couple of websites? And
I would be happy to. Hey, everybody, I'm Reverend Sean. And I serve as spiritual leader, pastor, whatever you want to call it, at Unity Center in Norwalk, Connecticut. Our website is www.unitycenterps.org. That's Unity Center. P as in practical, S as in spirituality.org. That's what we used to call it, and we just changed the name recently from Unity Center for Practical Spirituality to Unity Center in Norwalk. And my personal website is for my radio show, thegoodshow.com, thegoodshow.com. You have to put the in there, though. thegoodshow.com.
thegoodshow.com.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's The Good Show with Reverend Sean. It's a fun show to listen to. Right now we're on hiatus, but listen to the archives. There's some great stuff on there.
So
great
who
interviews.
Are some of the interviews you've done?
Oh, gosh. Psychic John Edward, or medium. I don't know if he calls himself. I don't think he calls himself a psychic. He's medium.
Uh-huh.
David Friedman, Kathy Lee Gifford, Lucy Arnaz and Larry Luckenbill, Reyes and Katona Bennett, a lot of Broadway people,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people from spiritual field, I do a lot of entertainers and their spirituality
mm-hmm.
In there. So it's,
nice.
And a lot of great music. So it'll be, just do it.
So we talked about something last night and it just kind of flew past.
Yes.
And I was so interested in it because I think it's something that's prevalent and important. And you had mentioned that, I don't remember the conversation or the context, but you had mentioned that your mother was not happy finding out you were gay.
Oh, no. And this was back in the 70s.
Well, and that's critical.
We've got to understand something. I had no problems with me coming out. I was so grateful to realize that actually I was 14. It was inappropriate, the person that brought me out. Way too old for me. But and nonetheless,
but that's the first you knew of it? Or you knew as a child?
No, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about sex. I didn't know. I just knew I was supposed to have a girlfriend and a wife one day, but I had no leanings. And I had girlfriends, but I remember when this man, it was my step-uncle actually, reached up and grabbed my hand on Christmas Eve. And I felt things I had never felt in making out with a girl for half an hour to an hour.
Uh-huh.
And so I knew. And so what was great about that for me, and I'll be forever grateful to him for that, is that I suddenly knew who I was and where I needed to go to look for love. Now, granted, by 15, I went to the bars in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in that,
You went by yourself.
I did. I took an hour and 15-minute bus ride into the city of Pittsburgh to go to the bar.
Where did your mother think you were going?
She didn't know. I didn't have great supervision at
home. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious. Yes.
Yeah, I was not well supervised.
Okay.
My mother's third marriage had just ended.
I just love the way you put things. I was not well supervised. Okay.
I wasn't. I was terrible. And
but you're self-supervised wonderfully now.
Well, yeah, and I was pretty self-supervised wonderfully then to get me to here.
Yes, that's true. Okay, I don't want to take
off. Oh, please, no, interrupt anything. It's your show.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I like to say, it's our show.
Well, this one's yours. Yes,
well, thank you very much.
So go ahead.
So I started going to the bars, and I had a lot of fun. This was 1976, and Vicki Sue Robinson music, and it was disco. So it was great music, and it was a lot of fun, and I would go. I had to go in at happy hour because the bouncers always came on at 9. And I wouldn't be able to get in because I...
How did you get in at 15?
I walked in the door and nobody questioned it.
Uh-huh.
I would sit there and order a Manhattan.
And nobody said, show me a driver's license?
No.
You didn't have a driver's license. You were so young.
No, I didn't.
Too young for that.
I remember going to Atlantic City at 16 and I had my brother's draft card. And they let me into bars with that. Because it wasn't photo IDs back then.
Mm.
So anyway, I went to the bars and I was going for a few months. And I thought, oh, this would be a good way to tell my mother what's up with me. And I said, Mother, you should go to gay bars because all the men can dance.
Uh-huh.
That's
how I and she was a dancer.
She was. She had been a tap dancer. And she loved to dance, and she couldn't find men that she didn't have to lead. And so I told her this, and she said, what? And I repeated it. You go to gay bars. Why do you go to gay bars? And the thing was, you don't know my mother. Some of you might know my mother who listen, but I know my mother. She was not concerned for my well-being. She was concerned for hers because she would be embarrassed if it came out. Now, the whole thing is, nobody was surprised.
That's why she was not please.
Right. It was the embarrassment of it all.
But at what point did she realize? I mean, what did you say that made her realize that you were gay, or did you just say it?
Oh,
just
I just
like
said
that?
She said, "So you're gay?" And I said, "Yes." Uh-huh. And she was furious. She was so angry, so angry.
What
and,
did she say?
Oh, what else? There were several shaming things. Mm-hmm. You know, which role are you? And it was nasty.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was nasty.
Oh,
it was
and ignorant, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Which role are you?
Oh, my goodness. My mother was.
Yes.
You know, an ignorant, small town, southwestern Pennsylvania woman who had, surprisingly, for as much as she had been out in the world, certain things kept her a little girl. Mm-hmm. And shame was one of them. I mean, she was so beautiful to look at and things, and she could hold conversations with many people, but it was limited. Mm-hmm. I remember one time after I came home from Provincetown once, she said, the first season, I came home, came in the door, and she said, "Can I kiss you? I don't want to get AIDS." I said,
Oh my God.
Oh, I broke down over that one. And she apologized. Then, my family got education.
Now, was
then.
That just a dig, or was that also ignorance?
It was ignorance. Total ignorance.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Total ignorance. My brother had just expressed a fear about his children being around me.
My goodness.
And I said, pick up a magazine, read a book. My family got educated from that. You see, good can come from all of this.
Yeah.
But it hurts at the time. If you can tolerate the hurt at the time, then you can forgive a lot of it. I remember all this stuff, but I don't hate them anymore for it. They did. They really weren't out to hurt me.
No, they
That's
were out
the
to
thing.
Save them.
They weren't out
right.
to hurt me. Yes, right. And to say so. My mother it was always, "Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody," because she would be embarrassed and she would look bad if people knew I was gay.
I have a question.
Huh?
How does that make a parent look bad if you're gay?
They did something wrong
to make you be gay. Oh,
yes.
Was there a shortcoming that forced you into this odd?
Yeah, because they didn't understand anything natural about it.
I see.
When I was 24 and ended a 6.5-year relationship with a man they loved and loved for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
He and I are still friends. He's 72 now. I'm 53. He's still my family.
So how did they get to this point of acceptance and loving this fellow that you were?
They saw I was happy.
Oh.
For the first time in many years, I was happy. I was taken care of. He was a good man, despite the fact that he was a Catholic, which was bad news in my family. You weren't allowed to be Catholic. You weren't allowed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother and aunt that he lived with were wildly independent women. Good people, but all good people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they saw, was there was a kindness there. But see, I had started the forgiveness process for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to allow myself to have a great life, whether they allowed me to or not. So I started my healing work. I was really depressed as a teenager, suicidal and frightened. And what I had to do, because I had no tools, I had no self-help books, nobody. And I realized, Sean, you can't keep hating yourself like this. So I would get out of bed, take a shower, do whatever I needed to do with my hair, because I had hair then. And even if I was going to go back to bed, so I didn't hate what I looked at in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to be a greasy teenager who looked at himself in the mirror hating himself.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do those things for myself, and then self-esteem started to build. Somehow I had these tools. And so anybody listening to this, I give you the tools now if you haven't thought of them. So with my mother, she and I went through a lot of battles. At 24, when I ended that relationship, just before I moved to New York, she said, "Well, now maybe you can meet the right woman."
Oh.
And then once I went out with an ethnic woman. An ethnic woman.
Oh, ethnic, yes.
Ethnic. And I told her, she said, "I'd rather have you the way you are."
Oh, my goodness.
That's where I come from.
Wow.
That's the kind of ignorance I come from. Because that would have been even more shameful. Because quite frankly, me walking down with the street doesn't declare, with a man doesn't mean I'm gay.
Right.
But if I walk down the street with an African-American woman.
Yes, that means you're something wrong.
That means I'm with an African-American woman.
Yes.
And that was something my family couldn't even contemplate.
How sad for people to have all these.
I know. But then over the years.
I mean, in their own heads.
Over the years, as both my brothers divorced their wives, she had been divorced 3 times, she began to see that it wasn't heterosexuality that made guaranteed happiness.
Oh, okay, that's what I was going to ask. Because I think sometimes when parents are upset that a son or daughter,
mm-hmm.
is what they really are afraid of is that they're not going to be safe in this world because people are going to pick on them and make their lives miserable. It's partly a protective thing. And then there is the, where am I going to get my grandchildren?
Yeah, she wasn't. My oldest brother gave her grandchildren.
Oh. But I think that's there for some mothers.
I agree.
Yeah.
For some of them.
Yeah.
Not mine.
Okay.
Not mine.
I can see that.
My mother's not a horrible person. She's not good with children.
Right.
She has no skills. Right. She had no skills. So over the years, though, she began to see differently. And then I brought somebody home from New York who I was involved with, who was also a good man, kind, generous, helped. Our Christmas gift was we painted her apartment that year. Just,
yes.
There was no, and she's still friends with Richard, and it's... And she sees, okay, that maybe this is... She still would prefer that she could brag about me with some woman, but she can't. So she can't brag about me in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was narcissistic enough, she was looking for her sons to give her some cachet in life.
But can she brag about... Could she brag about you now because you're with a really important...
No, she's dead.
I say, could she if she
no,
were?
No, David's Jewish. David's all... She would like
this
David.
This goes from bad to worse, I see.
She would like David. Mm-hmm. She would like him a lot.
Right.
I don't know if she would brag that we are in relationship, but uh-huh. She would brag that I'm friends with him.
Oh, okay.
Let's say one year, we talked last on your other show that I used to light nightclub acts. Mm-hmm. And one New Year's Eve, I did follow spot for Tommy Tune at the Rainbow Room. Well, a year later, I find out she's been telling everybody, Tommy Tune requested that I do the lights for him. I said, no, Mother, that's not what happened. I said, he met me that night. That's about it. She said, well, don't tell anybody because I said, Mother, that's why we can't succeed in life. We can't live up to your lies and your embarrassment.
Yes.
I said, what if it's enough that I'm happy and doing things I love to do? What if that's enough?
That's a wonderful concept, having to live up to somebody else's embarrassment.
Yeah.
That's just a killer.
You're not kidding. Yeah. And I had to put my foot down because I wanted the life and I wanted to love my mother.
Oh, and all children do.
You're not kidding.
Yes.
Nobody wants to hate their parents. Right. Nobody wants to.
Right.
Sometimes people feel it's the only alternative. And I understand some people's parents are hateful. I wanted to love my mother. So
well, you see children loving still hateful parents.
Well, yes, but mm-hmm. they have to do it from over here.
Right.
I started hugging my mother when I come home. I started hugging my brothers. I come home to visit. It's the love of another. Love. It's all forgiveness in the family. And we'll get to where my mother really came out of it in a minute. But I remember one, Chris, when I first started hugging my oldest brother, we were not a touchy family. Oh, we got to do this. And he'd say some expletive. And then one Christmas, I was home and he was in a mood. I was in a mood. And I remember we were at lunch one day and he said to me, you keep saying mother's different. And I don't see it because he didn't like our mother and with good reason. Mm-hmm. And I said, you're right. She hasn't changed.
Oh.
But I have. So she's different with me than she used to be. There's no room for the other one. And he heard that. That made sense, but he wasn't ready to let go of his stuff with her. And I remember that last night I was at home. He was just nasty that night. And when we finished our dinner out, we went outside and I said, see you next time. And I got in my car. There was no hug. And ever since then, his arms have been out to me. He missed it. He knew the difference. He and I are very, very close now. He and I are very close brothers. We look forward to each other's company. He has been through things in life that no parent's supposed to have to go through. You know, his son took his own life a couple of years ago, the love of his life. And his daughter is doing great. His daughter's great, my niece and everything. But, you know, to go through that with your first hand, terrific car accident, and 2 years later took his own life. And it's like that parents aren't supposed to have to go through that.
No.
And yet there's no supposed to. Sometimes it happens.
Right.
And there's nobody's fault.
That's the truth.
Kirk wasn't on drugs. He wasn't doing any of that. Driver's license for 2 weeks and was driving his sister to the gym after school. And he waved to somebody and he veered off right into a truck. You know, there's no foul up.
Right.
Just some bad things happen to good people.
That's right. And sometimes it's not your fault. It's just your turn.
Yes. And we don't understand it.
Right.
We started to talk about that last time, that our arrogance, that we think we know how people should die. It's the same result. But we don't know how.
No.
And so we have to bless it and let it move on. So anyway, my mother.
Yes.
Later on, when I was with that person, that nice man I brought home from New York, that I was with for 3.5 years. And we were breaking up. And I called her and I said, Carter and I are going to...
Was that heartbreaking for you? Or was
No, it was ready. It was time.
Okay.
It was just, I was ready to get healthy. And he was a good man and I was not in love.
Uh-huh.
Just that simple.
Yeah.
good person. And it's a great thing I did for him, because now he's been with somebody for a lot of years and still seems to be very happy. So you're welcome. But anyway, I said, you know, Carter and I are going to, and she said, doggone it, just when you meet somebody you can trust, it still doesn't work. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's a gift. There's a big present in this phone call. It's no longer bad that I was with a man.
Mm-hmm.
That same phone call, we were talking, and she was talking about her father, our grandfather, and she said, you know, he's different. I said, yeah, he's not so scary anymore, is he, Mother?
Oh.
She said, no. She was an only child, and my grandfather didn't like her.
Oh.
For whatever reason, he just didn't like his daughter. He liked his grandsons, not his daughter. He's a misogynist, is my assumption. And so but she said, he's different. I said, yeah, you're not so scary anymore, Mother. And she said, Sean, there had to be rules. And I said, Mother, I never listened to your rules. Your rules meant nothing to me. You weren't around. I said, but it was a lot of verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, there was. Most people I know don't get those gifts given to them.
That's huge.
My mother gave me that.
And without a but.
Right.
No apology has a but.
No.
Yes.
No defense, no apology. And I didn't attack. That's the end. That's why 2 years later I was able to do what I described on the previous show about going to her and thanking her.
Yes. Yes.
And so to start to get it, that things are,
admission,
we don't know.
Admission of truth is really healing.
Yes, it is.
She's, yes.
Admission without justification.
That, well, I'm saying no apology has a but.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I was feeling, yeah.
I'm looking, in my forgiveness pursuits, I'm looking to end all contracts.
What does this mean?
I have a friend, you heard me on the last show say, God, that my process, which is God, I'm willing to experience this forgiveness because I realize it's not something I do, it's something I experience. And so I had another friend I was working on, somebody that I just really had a grudge over, who had been a friend for years. And I would take a little bit of glee every time I heard he wasn't happy about something.
Sure.
And one day, I'm in the car, and I'm actually thinking about a neighbor that I had a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the thought came to me, they're just doing what they think is the right thing to do at the time. And I thought, well, isn't that all of us? Aren't we always just doing what we think is the right thing to do at the time? I'm not saying it's the best. Mm-hmm. 1 second after we do it, we may realize, oh my gosh, what was I thinking?
Right.
But in the moment, we can take the Holocaust, we can take all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing what we think is the right thing to do, at least to feel the way we want to feel. And I thought of my friend in the city, and I thought, that's what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was doing in all my retaliating thoughts. Just doing what I thought was the right thing to do at the time, I thought, that's forgivable. So I called him. I said, I'm coming into the city to teach a class. I'm not far from you. Want to have dinner? And he said, yeah, that'd be great.
Was he surprised, or did he know?
I don't think he knew the extent of my upset.
Uh-huh.
We've never discussed the upset.
Oh.
We've never made a contract that I will be friends with you as long as you never do this. That's not a friend.
Right.
I don't want contracts that you have to behave a certain way or I won't
see.
Be your friend.
Yeah.
We've got to be able to talk about things. But it can't be a contract, a conditional contract that I won't love you if you do this, this, or this. I don't know how I'll feel if you do this or this or this, but I can't tell you today, and therefore you must sign it.
I thought you were going to say something else when you wanted to null and void all contracts, which was that the contracts that kept you locked into being the abused child.
Well, that contract, too. But those interpersonal,
yes.
Non-paper contracts.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, that's not. I want to love people, even on their hard days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say bad days. Never say a bad day. We have hard days and we have easy days.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's really easy to be me, and some days it's really hard to be me.
So even in the language you use, you can really remove yourself from that judgmental,
I had to learn. I remember one day.
Behavior follows language sometimes?
Absolutely. Thought is cause. In the new thought, what I think is the cause of my experiences. And it's not about blame, but example I use is I knocked over a glass of water one day years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the worst things you could do when I was a kid, not use a coaster.
Oh, yeah.
That would bring down the wrath of my mother.
Right.
And one day I knocked this glass over and I started to get upset and I said, no. Oh, I was hoping that would happen. Thank you, God. And then I could laugh over spilt water. How silly it is.
Yes.
And I began doing that about more and more things. Oh, I was hoping that would happen.
That's great.
People, I have a friend years ago who came to me and he said, Sean, I was just diagnosed with HIV. And I said, congratulations. I'm sorry. I had a friend who was just diagnosed with HIV. And I said, congratulations. And he jerked back. And he laughed. I was mentoring him. And he, at that time, we had an active mentoring relationship.
Uh-huh.
And near the end of the day, he said, you know, my other friends have been a lot more sympathetic than you. I said, yes, and your friends will love you to death. He said, I enjoy you, and I want you around. So I'm not here to feel sorry for you because you were diagnosed with this. And he went on to start, he read all the New Thought books. And Myrtle Fillmore, Unity's co-founder, this is all acts of forgiveness. Unity's co-founder, when she was diagnosed with tuberculosis and given 3 months to live, that's when she decided, and this is 1886, wanted to do something else. Unity had not begun at that point. This was the beginning of Unity. And she stopped going to doctors. And I'm not here to tell anybody not to go to a doctor. What I say is go to a doctor till you know you don't have to go to a doctor. But she went to a lecture one night, heard, I'm a child of God, therefore I do not inherit sickness. And she went home and apologized to her body for having called it sick.
Yes.
And then she began to praise it. Because we respond to praise.
And I hope she did that in a love letter that's in writing for somebody to see.
Oh,
those
she's
are
got
wonderful
books.
Letters.
She's got some in fact, she's got a book called Myrtle Fillmore's Healing Letters.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. So when you said congratulations, what spurred you to use that phrase?
This is your next thing.
Uh-huh.
This is your next healing opportunity.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It always is. Every tragedy that befalls us is our next healing. That's
right.
Somebody referred to Robin Williams' tragedy, and it's like, no, that's not a tragedy. We don't know what that was. That was Robin Williams having his life. The way I just assume he gave up hope.
Mm-hmm.
He guess why else would you kill yourself unless it was finally hopeless in your mind? Doesn't mean it was hopeless, but in your mind it was,
that's right.
And that's what you give up.
Right.
And he battled, yes, he battled depression, but he battled addiction. He had had a few relapses over the years.
Mm-hmm.
He was public about his stuff. And that once you pick up, I don't think it's ever the same, especially after long-term sobriety.
You know, when you said that congratulations, and then you talked about your other friends will love you to death, there is that, I mean, this is a little off the topic, but I want to know.
Oh, no.
There's that really horrible moment. I have a couple of friends who have been diagnosed with different, and people are treating them as if they are already dead.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a natural way. And people, there's a big difference between living with a disease and dying from it.
Yes. Yes. We'll get to, oh, poor such and such. You and I will kill that person off talking about him or her.
Right.
And that's the thing.
Well, you're right, because we take away their life by doing that.
Because we can't bear how we feel.
Yes.
And that's the David Friedman's thought exchange.
Right.
If I can feel this way, you can go ahead and live forever, and I can just go ahead and love you.
Yes.
So he had read the Myrtle Fillmore stuff. She had one day where the pneumonia was setting in. It took 2 years for the TB to be lifted out of her body, but it was.
Mm-hmm.
She lived another 45 years.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of Unity. So one day she pneumonia and she prayed and said, what's up? What do I do? And she heard a voice that said, open up all the windows and clean the house from top to bottom. She said, well, but I'm in pain. I can't breathe. Open up all the windows. And she did. By the end of the day, she had sweated all of it out of her. So he read this and he started a business. He no longer has it, but called Mr. Clean Queen. And he went around cleaning houses to sweat it out of his system. And he got the tragic, what I call tragic cases of people who haven't cleaned their house since 1984.
Oh, yes.
Those people that he would go in with a shovel and he would clean it out and then they would hate him.
Why?
Because now they had to see themselves.
Oh.
They couldn't look at this. They couldn't blame this for being.
Yes.
We're on the radio. I just picked up an object.
Oh, thank you.
To say, you know, they couldn't look at their apartment and say, this is why my life is not working.
Oh, yes.
This is why I can't have a relationship.
Uh-huh.
Now what's left in the apartment but themselves. Now they have to look at, this is why I can't have a relationship.
That's a gift.
It is, but, that's a painful gift. It's like when I quit drinking, quit smoking. It's like, now I have all this time
uh-huh.
to do something else with.
So you need somebody to help you see that that's a gift. Okay, I want to get to love letters.
Okay.
Because where's the love letter in this one? Do you have nieces and nephews by any chance?
I have two nieces.
Uh-huh. How old are they?
One, I think Ashley's 28 or 29. She just had my first grand nephew.
Oh, okay.
And
so
then,
you've got lots of people in your family who are going to find these love letters you're writing.
I'm a little monotrack here.
Okay.
You're right.
By the way, so I'm thinking because I would do it, a letter to your a niece and a nephew?
A niece, a grand nephew, and then another niece.
Okay. I would write a letter to your mother saying, I've been thinking about us, and here's what I want to say. And just, like, your whole history and how she did come through.
Interesting.
And then, dear mom, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to my niece and nephew just so to share the joy in what I'm feeling.
Nice.
And then do it.
Let's look into that.
And so, there's always some place to send a love letter. Love letters to people gone are great.
I used to do that after my mother died.
Did you?
I did. 3 weeks after she died, I was racing because I couldn't pick up the phone and call my mother.
Yes.
To the point where I was on the floor punching myself in the head.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, you bought her a birthday card. Get it out.
What'd you do?
Well, I got the card out, and I thought, you're this miserable. Write her a letter.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'll be honest. I only had to write one letter, one sentence.
What?
Dear mother, I can't tell you how much I miss you. And I looked up. And it's at 9:17 on the VCR clock. So it was 1997. That was the exact time 3 weeks before my brother called me to tell me she was dead.
Yes.
Now, I didn't know if that was from my mother, but I knew I was loved by the universe. That was my love letter. Over the years, I have been known to send little notes or
cards. And by the way, a great
cards.
Love letter can be one sentence.
But what I do is I put them in the mail.
Yes.
With a dollar bill.
Oh.
I put a dollar bill in the envelope with the card or the letter.
And you address it to whom?
To mother. Throw it in the mailbox. I think whoever gets it gets a dollar.
That's fabulous.
That's...
Oh, another thing I never thought of. Just when you think you have thought of everything.
It really helped me in my
morning
process.
Sean comes into your life. And, that's great.
Yeah, I've told many people, suggested to many people whose parents have died.
Oh, I'm going to include that in my workshops.
Oh, do.
May I just attribute it to you?
That's fine, either way.
I'm going to write an article on that.
Oh, good.
That's great.
Yeah, but we'll both write an article. We have different readers.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Just who did you mail it? Put it in the mailbox?
To mother.
Oh, yes.
I threw it in the street mailbox with the dollar in it. And that's and I felt better. And that's all I was trying to do.
Yes.
To make me, I wasn't looking to be prolific. I just wanted to feel better.
But you know, you're going to change somebody. Every letter changes somebody's life, whether it's for a moment or forever or opens up somebody's eyes. Yes.
When you find those old love letters from the Civil War times and you read them. And so you're so right. And you're so inspiring me right now to take some action.
It's an exciting business. And by the way, you speak so beautifully and you think so beautifully.
Thank you.
That what's the struggle for writing it down on paper?
Oh, self-consciousness.
But you're in a room by yourself.
Self-consciousness that somebody else is going to read this.
Oh,
that's
yes.
why I haven't finished my books.
Oh, somebody is going to read
it. Yeah, it's
yes.
the difference between what I call difference. It's like
but
stage
wait a minute.
Actors.
You're able to put, I mean, I don't mean to like beat a dead horse.
Oh, no,
here,
let's
but
talk.
You're able to put a letter with one sentence and a dollar in a mailbox.
They don't know
and
me.
Not and not worry about where it goes is the thing. But if you write these letters...
My name is on them.
Yes.
And I'm putting judgments in their head from me. It's the difference between being God consciousness and self consciousness.
What judgments are you putting in their head?
That, oh, punctuation. Oh, that he didn't write.
Oh,
it.
I
oh,
see. Oh,
what
nonsense.
Was he thinking?
Yes.
Ooh. Or ooh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't think people think that.
I told you, I put the judgments in their head.
Right, yes.
I'm trying to write a song with David right now
uh-huh.
for my as a birth gift for my new nephew. And David wants me to write more stuff down, and I go sit there and I start to get so self-conscious,
uh-huh.
which is all in the ego.
Well, but that's so, I mean, we only have about another minute here, and I'm going to grab it, because that's interesting for me to hear you say you're so self-conscious. Because you talk about anything, and your name and your voice is on it, you don't seem self-conscious. Ah, so that's what I'm saying. It's so easy for you to do in this format. All you're doing is putting it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And every wonderful, insightful, beautiful, healing thought just on paper instead of out into the air.
I agree.
Uh-huh. Oh, I hope I you do it. Okay.
Thank you inspiring me, truly.
Thank you so much for everything I learned. This is great. Okay,
Yay.
Janet
We're
Gallen
shaking
saying
hands now.
Good, yes, goodbye for right now, and we'll talk to you soon. And I hope over time we'll hear lots more from Reverend Sean. Bye, and thank you.
Thank you.